Hey there, welcome to another Tesla Motors Club podcast. My name is Lewis.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Mike.
Today's episode, we're going to cover the Rivian R2 and their surprise R3 and R3X cars that they revealed. Elon suing OpenAI. New lawsuit. It's just another day for Elon. We'll get into all that AI hype. And the next gen Tesla Roadster finally got some more updates. All that and more. Episode 61 starts now. Gentlemen, we're back. A few of these topics happened a few weeks ago, but we've had a little bit of a break and we couldn't get to all of them that we wanted to in a previous show. But I'm excited to talk about them still. I think they're still worth discussing. The Rivian show, my goodness, that was very different from the Tesla shows. As someone who's seen a lot of Tesla reveals, I didn't expect that at all. What were your thoughts on it?
For one thing, it started on time. Clearly night and day in terms of the presentation, right? The presentation was practiced, but not overly practiced, and was clear. The timing worked on everything. There were no weird, awkward moments. Of course, Elon has his communication style. He could use some Toastmasters or something. This guy, I mean, he came off as a nerd. He's no Steve Jobs. He's not a real presenter type guy, but it was perfectly fine. And
He was articulate enough.
Exactly, yeah. What I'm really surprised about most is that they're able to keep the R3 revealed a secret.
Well, they pulled it off, though.
Yeah, I was shocked. I did not expect. Oh, and by the way, here's another car model and another car model.
Everybody expected the R2, which is what they got. And then It was, oh, by the way, we've got not just one, but we've got two extras for you. Because you get the R3 and the R3X.
Yeah, it goes out pretty far, too. That's not like next year's car. That's a few years away. So that's pretty early prototype to see and reveal.
Prototype might be a strong word, because supposedly they're basing all three cars on the same chassis.
Right.
And they're saying the R2 is production ready. It's not a prototype. It's ready to go into production.
We'll see. They're saying 2026.
That's what they say.
We'll see if they can stick to those timelines.
Words are cheap.
Our last episode was mainly about them having some financial issues. I wouldn't expect them to be profitable, but they're losing money still. And they had some layoffs. Between here and 2 years from now, could feel like a very long time if money is tight.
So in September of 22, their revenue was $536 million. Revenue September 23, $1.34 billion. So they're increasing their revenue. Now, that doesn't mean they're actually making money. They're not. If you look at the balance sheet, their cash and cash equivalent reserves in September 2022 was $13 billion. They're at $9.1 billion as of September 23. So they burned a little cash. But $9 billion is still a significant chunk of change to have sitting around.
I guess they got the runway. And honestly, you know, like I said last time, I feel like there's enough support there. Amazon is a major customer.
They are.
Rivian has been good about carving out their own niche in terms of not directly competing with Tesla. All the other automakers found that, okay, against Tesla, they lose mainly because Tesla has an amazing price point compared to everybody else. And Cybertruck took a while. So Rivian managed to make it to market faster than Tesla.
Sure.
And it's less of a radical design. It has its own design quirks, those oval headlights and whatnot. But it is an EV truck that made it to market.
And it's been fairly well received.
Yeah, exactly. The demand is huge for Cybertruck, but they're obviously production limited now. And it just became available, relatively speaking. So now with this R2, it's starting to be a little closer to things that Tesla offers. How do we compare it to the Model Y, say?
Or? It's roughly the same size as a Y.
Yeah, but it has more of a traditional SUV look, right?
It does. It absolutely does.
Tesla has a very distinctive design aesthetic, for good or bad. I really like, obviously, a lot of the Teslas. Cybertruck is its own unique design aesthetic. Rivian, I still think Rivian, they're nice looking vehicles, but they do look closer to a traditional manufacturer.
One of the first things you'll notice when you get into the R2 and compare it to a Model Y, the Model Y's got the big screen on one side, nothing in front of you. Rivian's got an iPad on the side, but they've also got a dash.
It's like a Model S or an X.
They have a legitimate dash, which is going to appeal to a lot of people.
Not having a display directly in front of you just feels like, oh, okay, we're trying to save money here.
Yep.
I mean, I understand why Tesla does it, but it does feel cheap in some ways. I'm used to it. I was in California for about 3 weeks. And while I was there, I had to drive a friend's VW. And when I got back home and I got my Model 3, I was like, wow, I'm driving the future. It really felt like this car feels so much more advanced. But it is nice to have a display in front of you, as we talked before, like either a heads-up display or just a normal display.
Yeah. You know, having to glance off the one side.
Yeah, it's nice. So that's a plus, I think, for the Rivian. Looking at Y versus, say, R2, the Y, it's a scaled-up Model 3. It looks like it's aerodynamic, right? It has nice curves. Rivian's design style is boxy.
It's a brick.
It's a kind of boxy that feels like a throwback, particularly when they showed the R3, which to me, the main design feature is that instead of having a square, they cut the angle off on the back. Reminds me of the old Golf. Golf GTI or whatever, which is a nostalgic feeling for me, actually, because those are kind of cool, particularly if you had a nice stick shift. Those are fun vehicles.
It's a little faster in your Golf.
Well, sure. So yeah, I guess the question is, how well will that do? I think there's definitely space for it in the market, like the R3, particularly if they're going to have a performance version too.
Yeah, it's interesting because the R2, the estimated, and keep in mind, this is an estimated price point, but there's going to be three levels. There'll be a single motor, dual motor, and a tri-motor, supposedly. So there'll be three price points, but we're looking at 45 to 55K. Which puts it square at the Model Y. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to go toe to toe.
Yeah. To be honest, I've been seeing more and more Rivians driving around, right?
Yeah, so have I.
Obviously, there's Teslas everywhere, tons of Teslas where I'm at, but there's almost as many Rivians as I see Teslas in my particular neighborhood, which I'm kind of surprised about. I could see the R2 doing very well. The R3, it's far out to say, but we don't know what the landscape will look like in a couple of years. I definitely like, we got to see that NACS charge port, Tesla's charge port now on other EVs.
So we have it, but what do you think about where they put it?
Yeah, that's...
It's kind of an odd spot.
It's better than where they used to have it.
All right.
Is it the ideal place for Tesla? No, I agree with what Doug said in the past, right? It should probably be on the passenger front.
So you pull in straight.
As opposed to the passenger rear. But it makes sense because they want to be compatible with the existing infrastructure that Rivian has done. Basically, you just change whether you're backing in versus you're pulling forward in. But yeah, it makes a lot more sense to be on the passenger side.
The rationale, if we go back to the original Roadster, why did Tesla put it in the rear left? Now, the reason it's in the rear is because the Roadster was a rear-wheel drive vehicle. So all the cabling from the battery to the motor, in fact, the battery was behind the seat, and it was going to be in the rear too. Otherwise, you're running a heavy cable to the front.
Keep short runs for the cables and everything else.
Exactly. But as for why would it be on the left and the right, I tend to think it should have been on the right. And back then, I'm like, it should be on the right for curbside charging. And the answer I got back then was, we don't want people forgetting to plug it in. And as the driver gets out, they walk right past it. Yeah. I tend to think that was like an Elon thing when he made the decision, and then that's where it stuck. I don't know that, but Tesla tends to stick to their guns, but I don't think there's good rationale for it being on that side. If anything, for me, I plug the car in and then I need to get something out of the trunk. Now I'm stepping over the cable to get to the trunk.
Yep.
Now for Rivian, they have a similar rationale. So their first vehicle was all-wheel drive because it was a truck, right? So they're going to have motors in the front and the back, and most people pull in. So it made sense for them to put it in the front because there was cabling up there and because there's motors and stuff up there. But now they have different trim levels for the R2 and the R3, and there's a rear-wheel drive version. So it should be in the back, so they're not wasting cabling. And then just normal logic, yeah, it should be on the right side. And actually, this is exactly what their CEO said, is that they need to be compatible with curbside charging in Europe. So that's why it's on the rear right, and it makes perfect sense for it to be there. So Tesla has been putting out suggestions as they open up their network, that as other manufacturers start putting in the NACS connector, that they should put it in the rear left or the front right to be compatible with the existing stuff that they have. But I think they're going to need, like, the version 4 superchargers I've heard have longer cables. I think they're going to have to be compatible with it being on either side of the vehicle. And that's just the way it's going to have to work. I think Rivian has made the best choice for them. And that's really what Tesla should have done too, but they didn't. So that's just where it is.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
So the R2 is slated for what, next year to release?
2026.
2026.
In terms of deliveries, yeah.
That seems really far away.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's not far away in the realm of like when Tesla announces a car and how long it takes to come out.
Ouch.
But it does seem far away from what's going to happen in the next 2 years, right? Like Tesla is such an advantage, right? Like, it's a question of how they're going to be able to compete.
It definitely feels like a long time. We've been talking about money and being profitable. There's been talk of Rivian removing things from the R1, trying to save money, like reducing the number of speakers in Tesla, the sound system, it. Stuff like that. Tesla does that too. Right.
I put my $100 in. I've got my reservation in place for the R2. Didn't hesitate at all. And I probably have a better chance of that than I had with the Lyriq. And after watching the Lyriq over the last 8 months or so, I'm kind of glad I canceled that. That may have ended badly.
So the Lyriq was a Cadillac?
That was the Cadillac, kind of a sportback sedan. Mm-hmm. But what we're learning with GM is GM still can't do software at all. I mean, they are just constantly fighting software battles. And I think Rivian's actually got a pretty decent handle on their software compared to a lot of other manufacturers.
Yeah, well, Rivian's in a better position. We've talked about this before, how someone like GM has a hard time because of all the contractors and subcontractors.
That's right, right.
In terms of all the system integration that they have to do. Rivian, I don't think they're as vertical as Tesla, but a lot of them are Tesla veterans. They understand the importance of software. As opposed to someone like Fisker, who has a real hard time
not
with their software.
Too soon.
Too soon. We should talk about them real briefly. I mean, they're having troubles.
They're hurting.
I guess I should try to recap real quick. Fisker Automotive was a company back in around 2010. They were trying to compete with the Model S, and they came out with their sedan. And the problem with it, Heinrich Fisker is a designer, a stylist. And he's not an engineer. And basically, they tried to make the thing out of off-the-shelf parts, and the system integration was terrible, and the software was terrible, and they had so many problems. And that company went under. In fact, there were congressional hearings about it. Like, can you imagine? They dragged him in front of a Senate hearing because they had gotten a
loan or something.
DOE loan, yeah. And yeah. All that money went nowhere in their cars. Basically, everywhere where they could make a decision, they made the wrong decision.
That's a gift.
There wasn't enough demand to even have their cars at their dealers. So they're storing a bunch of cars at the port in New Jersey. And then a superstorm came through and there's flooding. And then a bunch of them went up in flames. Probably wasn't even their main batteries, probably just the 12-volt battery system shorted out and caused a fire and then just spread to a bunch of their cars.
That was probably more beneficial for the company, though, with the insurance money as opposed to trying to sell the car.
Except.
And it was in Jersey.
Except that they didn't do their insurance right.
Oh.
And so their argument was that the cars were insured in transit. They tried to say that, because they're not at the dealership yet. They're in transit.
They're still in transit.
And no, there was a lawsuit and the insurance company was able to argue like, no, they weren't in transit. They were in storage and they're just sitting there. And so, no, they didn't get the insurance money on all those cars.
Oh, wow. That hurts.
The wrong choice at every point. And then also they had a couple cars that just spontaneously caught fire. And what's funny about this is I even called this out a while ago because I used to be on the Fisker forums back then. And some people were complaining about a fan that would just stay on. There was a problem with some switch or something in a fan. And it would stay on and it would run and then it would short out. And they didn't fix that issue. And then they had two cars catch fire, one taking somebody's house with it and their Chevy Volt parked next to it. Can you imagine? It was so terrible. Like, what terrible optics. Anyway, they went bankrupt and then they got bought by some Chinese company. And I remember when I suggested something like that was going to happen, like, vilified and, that's the worst possible case or whatever. And then it became the best possible case that they get bought by some Chinese company, right? And so that's what happened. And then that company changed their name to the name of the car. They changed their name from Fisker Automotive to Karma Automotive, allowing Fisker to basically reclaim his own name. And so now he's tried again. And the vehicles look much more refined now. They don't look like a rolling mustache now. They look like, they look pretty good, right? There's the Fisker Ocean, and Marquez Brownlee did a review of the Fisker Ocean, and he basically called it the worst car I've ever reviewed. And that was the title of his YouTube video. Now, he didn't say the worst car ever, or the worst car that have ever existed, or the worst car he's ever driven. He said the worst car he ever reviewed, which is accurate. But probably most people read that as the worst car ever.
I would argue that's intentional.
Yeah, right? Well, like, it's got to get the clicks.
Clickbait.
Yeah, but yeah. Man, Man. So it seems like some people are trying to blame Marquez for pushing Fisker even closer to bankruptcy. But I would say it all starts with having a bad car, right? And it was software mostly was the problem. Just bad quirks of incomplete software.
So I just looked it up, Doug. So Karma's still a thing. They're still around. Yeah. You can reserve a car, Kavya, K-A-V-E-Y-A. The reservation will cost you $10,000.
Okay. Is that a different vehicle? They renamed what was the Fisker Karma. They renamed the car, but I don't remember what they named the car. Something.
Kavya, apparently.
Kavya?
Yeah, I think that might be something else. Kavya doesn't ring any bells for me, so that might be.
There's a Gysera, G-Y-E-S-E-R-A.
Yeah, I don't.
You can reserve that for $5,000.
I don't know what any of that. So it's that they have more than one vehicle. I don't know what that stuff is.
They have three.
I don't know how well that Chinese company has done in terms of trying to make new vehicles, but it seems to me a lot of it was just sort of supporting the existing Fisker.
Yeah, it's all pre-order. None of it's real. It's all vaporware at this point.
Yeah.
Very pretty pictures.
Yeah. I know at least one person that went there from Tesla, like a customer relations type person. Mm. And I talked to her and she said, well, you know, the hours are much more sane and the work-life balance is better, you know, than Tesla, which I can believe.
That can be important.
For a Chinese company? Wow.
But she was here in the U.S., so whatever she needs to do. But
yeah, that's fair.
Clearly that company isn't going anywhere. So sorry.
So that was a long tangent.
Yeah,
if we rewind it a bit, how did we get here?
We got here because Fisker is on the verge of going under.
Going under. Okay, that's fair.
So Rivian, I think, will be fine.
Yep.
They'll be okay.
Fisker, maybe not.
Rivian, there were some rumors about their software having issues when they first came out, but they know what they need to do, and their cars look good, and their owners are pretty happy.
The original Rivian had quite a few complaints in the beginning, but much like Tesla, they did a lot over their updates, which were pretty successful in stamping out bugs and complaints. I don't hear hardly anything now. Unlike the Volkswagen, which the ID.4, you still have to take it to the dealer for any updates. They still can't do over-the-air updates.
Yeah, it's unpleasant. I will say, though, a friend of mine has a good friend that has a Rivian, and they really like the vehicle, but they bought it, didn't have very long, had an issue, and then they basically didn't have the car for a month. It was an R1. So they basically didn't have the truck for like a month while it was being fixed or repaired or whatever.
Was it waiting for parts or just?
I don't know specifics. I think probably. Now that they have it back, though, they're happy with it. But it was just, they had a very unpleasant experience in the
initial. Sadly, that's not an uncommon story with current Tesla owners.
Right.
It really isn't. My Model 3 was hit and I went to get an estimate. Two shops wouldn't even talk to me. They were backlogged 6 months. Didn't care. One shop would talk to me after I paid them $50. If I wanted an estimate, I had to pay them $50. But then they were saying it was going to take 4 months to get a bumper replaced. Best case.
That's awful. And on that topic, Hertz, right? I think it's related.
Yes.
So Hertz's CEO stepped down basically because he bought a lot of Teslas and it didn't work out. And that repair cost and time was one of the major factors.
Yep.
So Mike, I don't know if you want to give us a little backstory on this.
So the CEO of Hertz got this bright idea that he was going to rent EVs. And bought a ton of Teslas. Unfortunately for him, he bought at the peak, like a lot of people did.
Feel for him.
Tesla did not give Hertz a deal on the cars. And unfortunately, when they rented the cars, more often than not, they didn't give the new driver any kind of instruction or assistance. They just said, here's your car. Have a nice life. And for an EV owner, that's fine, kind of. But for the average renter who doesn't know what the hell a Tesla is or how to drive a Tesla or care or feed a Tesla, this is not a good way to do business. And they got a lot of blowback because of that. You know, they had Teslas dead on the side of the road, out of charge. People couldn't figure out how to charge them. Just didn't end well. And as we were just discussing, the price of repairs on Tesla is not cheap. And I know Tesla really factored that in. Which surprised me because the rental market is kind of hard on vehicles to start with. I mean, you would think that they would have thought about that, said, this is going to cost us a lot of money. Maybe they thought they could fix them themselves. But
I mean, I think from one angle, right, we often say that EVs have lower maintenance costs because you're not doing all these other forms of maintenance.
Maintenance,
that you need to do.
Yes, but hit or hitting something.
Exactly.
It's not maintenance.
I think that's one of those things of like accidents are much more expensive, especially with the time that they're off the road. And when your vehicle is actually there to generate revenue for your business, like in a rental car company, being off the road is a double hit because you got your costs of repair and then also the time it's not earning. So yeah, it seems, I don't know, it seems to me that eventually, obviously EVs will make a lot of sense for rental car companies because most cars will be EVs of some kind.
They seem to make sense for like Uber. Uber's done well at it.
Sure.
But also the Uber drivers are driving them long enough that they learn what's needed.
Exactly.
But I think probably a big part of that is, yeah, the education of the person renting out the car and the one who's receiving it, that they know where to charge. I mean, I did see photos on social media of like people showing up at an EA charger or whatever and not knowing how to use that.
Right. Can't plug in.
Or even at a gas station. They don't know what to do with the car. And just a little bit of information like, oh, use the car navigation and it will tell you where to go charge or whatever. I'm not sure what they did in terms of paying for supercharging. You think it would get charged to the car and then Hertz could pass that on.
One of the biggest complaints we saw on Reddit was Hertz used to have the J-plug adapter in the car. They stopped doing that because people kept taking them.
People keep them, yeah.
Yeah, people kept them. And then you got really no way to charge unless you're at a supercharger. And who in the average driver population knows that?
Well, that's one of the advantages of everybody adopting the same standard. But you would think that they'd be equipped for that not to be a problem. I mean, they try to sell you a GPS system or a baby seat or whatever. That should just be part of their checklist of items that are included. And this is missing. You get charged for it.
You charge them.
That smacks of the people that work the counters at Hertz not being educated about how to handle these vehicles.
So Hertz buys all these Teslas, but it wasn't much long after that that they cut a lot of people loose. And I kind of wonder if there's a cause effect. If you lose people, then you don't have the staff to really support this whole environment that you just brought on board.
I don't know how well they did during COVID, but probably not too well.
They did not.
They were coming back from that. It was 2022, I guess, when they were buying all these cars. And they came back with the big bet. Okay, people are traveling again. Let's go all in on EVs. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Maybe just because I'm biased. Like if I were traveling and had a rental car, I would totally want an EV. I totally miss my car when I don't have it. The last couple times I've been on a trip, and I needed to rent a vehicle, I ended up getting a truck, right? I ended up getting a pickup truck because that was the cheapest thing that they could give to me because all the, what should be the cheapest vehicle, the compact cars.
Sure.
Basically, the stuff with the good gas mileage was unavailable or they jacked the price up on those. And so the cheapest thing I could get was a pickup truck. Like I went to SFO and okay, give me the pickup truck or whatever. Well, guess what? The smaller pickup trucks were all gone. So they've, for free, upgrade me to these huge freaking pickup trucks.
For free.
Like I got this huge like F-250 or something.
Oh my word.
The gas was so expensive. And then I had to drive to Napa. Dude, I used to have a Mazda Miata and I would drive through San Francisco. It was so much fun to drive, open top, see all the buildings and stuff, take the hills and things. And here I am in this
so huge. So now you got this behemoth.
Hitting all the cars on the side of the road.
Huge truck. It's one thing. I can't tell how much space I have in front of me. I can't tell how much space I have to the side of me. I don't know if I'm like going to take out a parked car or what. That was back in 2021, I think. So before Hertz did this thing. And man, I would have loved to have those EVs. They also got other EVs as well. But I think they took the biggest bath on the Teslas because, yeah, they got those Teslas. And then Tesla slashed their prices. I don't understand completely all the economics of a rental car business, but part of it certainly is you have a vehicle and that vehicle depreciates and they cycle through their vehicles relatively frequently. Like their cars tend not to be more than a few years old. And so part of that is the value of the car.
Resale.
The resale value of that car. And it
tanked.
Went through the bottom. In fact, you can look online. You can see cars that Hertz is selling. And I see base model 2022 Model 3s for like $23,000. That's cheap.
They certainly paid a lot more for it.
And that's with maybe 40,000 miles on it. Now, I don't know what's the condition of a rental car. People don't treat rental cars that well. Actually, I treat them very well because I don't want to get whatever fees from the rental car people. But I guess most people, especially if they don't know what they're doing, maybe they let the thing sit at 0% or let it cook at 100%.
How much were you seeing it for sale? 20,000, 23,000?
Yeah, between 20 and 25,000 bucks for 2022.
So in 2022, the base model Model 3 was going for 48,000.
Yep, that's a big hit.
That's a huge hit.
I have to agree with what you said. If I was renting a car, I definitely would prefer an EV because I have an EV. But looking at it from the holistic view of the average driver doesn't know anything about an EV, has never driven an EV, it seems like a bad idea to try to educate people on EVs on top of the normal. Our producer, Adam, basically said, if you're at an airport and you're just trying to get to your hotel and you don't know anything about EVs, you don't want to have to learn and you're worried about the charging and where do I go? So I think that this was, again, a good idea, but maybe quite a bit early on execution. Well, one, it was bad timing with the price of EVs, the used market, all that kind of stuff. Because at the time, it looked like, oh, the used car prices were going up. So you're almost going to make money for buying these cars. In hindsight, obviously, that didn't happen. The market tanked. But even still, I think we're probably at least 10, if not 20 years away from EVs themselves being ubiquitous throughout, like the average driver understanding them and knowing them and having driven them to where it makes sense for people to be happy to have one.
Think about it, Lewis. You take someone that's used to a traditional car, traditional dash, traditional knobs, buttons, levers, and you throw them in a Tesla, which is a minimalistic, stripped to the bone, everything through a touchpad. And now you've got to completely relearn everything that you thought you knew. It goes beyond charging. It's just the operation of the car.
The mapping of the throttle, and especially like these newer vehicles where you don't even have normal shifters and you got to swipe your finger on the on the screen. I think it was an excellent idea. I think maybe they just went too hard. And especially if Tesla wasn't going to give them a discount on volume, then just see where demand is. Yeah. Have one at every location. And then see
who takes it, who rents it. Yeah.
People are asking for the Tesla and, oh, it's not available. Okay, maybe get another one then. They should have just eased into it instead of diving in because that got them burned, right?
They went big and then they went home. It's usually go big or go home. They did both. Okay. So I thought that was interesting. And again, related to what we were talking about with the concern about cost of repair and issues with delays and things like that on the cars. Now, I do want to change it up a little bit and get into some fun Elon drama because all of us love Elon drama. I mean, who doesn't? It's honestly half the reason to go on the internet these days. So Elon has sued or is in the process of suing OpenAI, which is a really interesting thing to do, considering he was one of the originators of OpenAI. He was actually the original money behind it, similar to one could say to Tesla, only I would argue he had more co-founding claim in OpenAI than he did in Tesla.
And the lawsuit is for breach of contract.
Breach of contract.
When there is no contract.
There is no contract, which is incredibly interesting. It's an interesting take. Doug said something before the show that I think is very true, that it seems like Elon sometimes likes to get publicity through lawsuits, right? It's like something is bothering him or he's upset by something. So he creates a lawsuit to get people to talk about it with no intention of winning the lawsuit.
A quick example goes back to this original Roadster. The Roadster was reviewed on Top Gear, which is a very popular UK car show. And it was mostly positive. The drive was positive, but then they showed the car like running out of battery and them having to push it in. And supposedly one of the Tesla technicians that were on site saw the script. And there was a script that, oh, we have to push it in before anything had happened. Though there was nothing they could actually sue them about. This is an entertainment program. They had no grounds to sue them, but it was PR by lawsuit. And Tesla has done that several times. I suppose that could be just, but it was obvious that they weren't going to win that. And so I don't know. With this one, maybe there's some value to getting discovery if it goes a little further and maybe see what OpenAI is up to.
So far, it's been interesting because Elon tweeted saying they should be called Close AI instead of OpenAI.
There's something to that.
So OpenAI basically responded by releasing a bunch of emails from Elon and conversations of Elon and the other founders and heads of the company going back 2015 to 2018 timeframe. Again, I was not there. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not claiming anything around those things.
Don't sue us.
Please don't sue me. Basically, what OpenAI seems to have presented appear to be emails involving Elon, where they said things like, OpenAI is not about being open source. It's about the betterment of humanity through AI. And that's what they mean by open. They just want everyone to benefit and not just a few rich people or a few companies to benefit. And so in these conversations said things like, well, early on, open source will be beneficial, all that kind of stuff. But as we get closer and closer to AI, we won't want to do that. You'll want to restrict it. And even Elon supposedly in one of the emails said things like, yeah, and at the time they felt they were very behind Google, which is kind of laughable now with ChatGPT and stuff. Most people don't consider ChatGPT to be worse than Google's Gemini. Most people consider it to be better. But at the time, Google was the winner, basically, in AI. They were way ahead of everyone. And Elon, I believe, I'm pretty sure, again, supposedly him in an email, said things along the lines of, if we release all this for free and we just publish it, we're just giving them the work that we're doing. We'll never catch up. The only way we can catch up is to be restrictive and to not publish these things. So it's kind of funny that now he's suing them for saying, oh, they should be publishing and they should be releasing all their stuff, when it, at the time, he even said it wouldn't make sense for them to do so. He also, it came out, he wanted to buy them. He wanted to be the CEO. He wanted them to merge into Tesla, potentially. Like, there was all these other plays of Elon wanting more control over the company. And all of that got rebuked, basically. You know, at one point he hadn't. So he was funding the company, right? Like, they had some investors, but they needed way more money. And he was making payroll. And apparently at one point, I think it was like, you know, Reid Hoffman or somebody had to step in and actually give money so that they would make payroll, because Elon was withholding the money, not wanting to give them money because he was displeased with the direction of things. Anyway, so there's a lot of interesting information that came out. Again, I'm not sure that the lawsuit itself has legs. That might not be the point of it. It definitely seems like Elon is more of like almost like a jaded former lover. Like, yeah. You know, he wanted something out of the relationship. He didn't get it. And now he's kind of bitter about it, because after he's no longer there, they became very successful. And he's a direct competitor, right? He has Grok. He has his own AI company, XAI or whatever. He's doing his things. He's got Tesla. He's got AI research. I'm sure there's AI folks, but Twitter, obviously, all that stuff's interconnected.
When OpenAI was founded, I remember watching interviews with both him and Sam talking about the mission of it and being on the same page. And then later, because Tesla is effectively doing AI with FSD, that there might be a conflict of interest. So Elon chose to leave then. But with these emails, it seems more like maybe he was forced out, or he left because he wasn't getting what he wanted.
Right.
As opposed to it being a very logical thing because, oh, we're working on our own AI. I guess the other thing about it, though, is that they needed to be somewhat profitable. As a company, OpenAI is a nonprofit, but they needed a profit path. And so they're talking about splitting off a separate part that would be a for-profit bit that would help fund the nonprofit bit. And part of that plan was to just make that part of Tesla, and then Elon would be the CEO.
It's something that he proposed. He basically proposed saying, without Tesla, they're just a nonprofit. They'll never raise the money they need. They need billions of dollars a year. No investors will invest in that on a nonprofit. You have to be for profit, but they don't want it to be too profitable. So they were like, oh, we'll have to do some amount of for profit, something to get the money. And I believe Elon's argument was, but if you're just by yourself, you have a 0% chance of success. If you come into Tesla, if basically Tesla owns or controls the company, now you have a fighting chance against Google, because Google at the time was $800 billion, and there's no way you can compete with them with all the hardware, all the video cards you'll need to buy, all that stuff. So that was his proposal. With Tesla, you have a fighting chance. I'll be the CEO, yada, yada. You know, he likes his control. Not that I blame him. And historically, he's done very well when he's had control of his company. So I'm not saying that was a bad path. But clearly, the other founders of OpenAI, Sam and the board and others involved, didn't want to take that path. And they also ended up being very successful, and they found a partner with Microsoft. Microsoft is basically doing with OpenAI what Elon wanted to do with Tesla, only Elon wanted even more control than what Microsoft appears to have. It's a very interesting back and forth, the drama there. And I'm sure we will find out more as the lawsuit moves forward. There might be more things published. I've been eating popcorn and just reading all the stuff and watching all the things.
It is really interesting. And things are very convoluted now, because Elon has XAI, which was clearly made as a response to the success of OpenAI, right?
Yes.
He didn't do it as soon as he left.
Nope.
They did it as soon as OpenAI.
ChatGPT, basically.
Was becoming part of the zeitgeist and everybody talking about it. And now a household name among geeks is Sam Altman.
Indeed.
Yes.
Of course, Elon has been trying to get more compensation from Tesla, part of the stick. He might take all his AI toys and go someplace else, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because that should be Tesla assets.
Right.
I don't think typically someone can pick up and take a company's assets and put it someplace else, like XAI, which is something he owns. But XAI is a separate company from Twitter, yet it uses all of Twitter's data. So I wonder what the current Twitter board thinks about that.
They have deals, right? So even if they were a separate company, in theory, you could quote unquote pay to have access to the data. There's definitely controversy around that with OpenAI, for example. Sam was on the board of Reddit, and there's a, you know, seems to be pretty, I would say, believable or reliable evidence that OpenAI and ChatGPT was trained off of Reddit's data. And Google has a lot of data. The funny thing is, the important thing with LLMs and a lot of the ChatGPT like tools is the training data that you have available. That's one of the key things that enables them to work. Because remember, all those models are all based off of this thing called transformers. Google develops transformers. Mm-hmm. They developed it. But OpenAI is the ones that operationalized transformers at scale in a way that turned into a product. And now they're a household name. And so that data is really important. And no one really admits to what data they have anymore. That's part of the drama. Is the early days, everyone would say, this is the data set we used. Oh, we used Wikicommons. We had all these open, known about data sources. Now it's all hush hush and locked down of which data sources they actually use. And there's lawsuits, right?
It's called copyright.
There's now lawsuits around copyright. New York Times has a lawsuit ongoing with OpenAI. Yeah. So that being said, a lot of these platforms are now having an alternative revenue stream, such as Twitter, such as Reddit, where, hey, they can sell their data as a training data set to these companies.
So XAI is very clear about that. They're using the Twitter data set.
Yes.
You have to wonder, though. That sounds like the most toxic data set to start with, right?
The interesting thing is that for ChatGPT to work, apparently, and again, I didn't work there. I don't know anybody that works there. Please don't sue me. This is just what I've read. They used a lot of resources and I guess some companies out of Africa and basically had teams of people cleaning up the data so that they could then use it for training. So I think there's definitely a lot of secrecy around data sources and also, though, the means in which they prepare the data and the data engineering that they do for training these models. And from my own opinion and standpoint, it seems like a lot of these models have kind of hit a wall. So while they are improving, everyone was like, tomorrow AGI will exist and we're all dead and everything's going to be gone and the world is over.
A bit premature.
Or even no one will have a job anymore because of AI. And to be honest, for somebody that works daily with machine learning and works in the industry, what I would say is that doesn't really seem to be the case because there seems to be diminishing returns on the available data sets. So it's almost like because the way that they work, they require a certain amount of information to get better. Throwing more and more data at them helps, but it helps less and less as you go. And there isn't enough data in the world. There's enough textual data by humanity worldwide to really get them to be much further. So if you think that they're great now, they're not going to be 10x better a month from now or a year from now, unless some big paradigm or revolutionary change or breakthrough happens. I'll just throw that out there. Don't doom and gloom. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah, well, I would think LLMs, they're most useful on your own data.
Mm-hmm.
Think about a law firm with a LexisNexis search or something like that. If you have a basic model that is then able to ingest all of case law, and then you just ask it a question. And if it were smart, then it could even test itself to see if it hallucinated, right? If it references a case, then go check to see if that case actually exists.
Right.
And that would certainly put some people out of a job.
Paralegals.
certain assistance. But the people that know how to use those tools would benefit.
For sure.
As it is right now, I think it already has restructured some businesses. And But definitely the company is trying to just generate news stories. They got burned.
Right.
Speaking of OpenAI, and to reinforce what you said, recently they showed off, I believe it's called... So I forget the video thing.
Sora.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say, but that's Japanese for sky. So I was a little confused because I thought I was confusing it with blue sky.
What is this Japanese for?
What is it? G-Ken. G-Ken is experiment.
Yes.
Wow.
I know that because I did.
He used to work in a lab in Japan, so I figured he would.
Futsuri no jiken oshita. I was doing physics experiments. Anyway, so Sora, they showed off their stuff. You know, it had its flaws, but recently there was an interview and they were really cagey with what their training set was. They just wouldn't say anything. And you could see the woman that was being interviewed. She like made these faces. Is YouTube one of your sources? And she's like, yeah, I don't know. I can't say what our sources are. She said licensed sources and readily available stuff, but she wouldn't say where any of that stuff was from. So yeah, that's the secret sauce now. Mm-hmm. That's why people would think that Google would have been ahead of everybody, just like people think Tesla should be above everybody in terms of self-driving. They have the data, right? Tesla has the ability to collect data off of how everybody's driving, whether they use FSD or not. Google has all my emails. They have all my searches and stuff like that. I would think Google would have done more. Very easily, Google could pretend to be me and, hey, do me a favor. An email comes in, suggest a response. Do you want to send this response? It should compose a whole response for me. And then I could just say, send this or not. Eventually, it'll be digital assistants talking to digital assistants, right? It'll just be robots all the way.
My digital people will talk to your digital people.
Yeah. Yes. Google should be ahead. And I personally feel like they're very much catching up in that area. I think their main problem was they were working in mostly some other areas of research. And this area of research just happened to do really well. So now they had to like shift gears and switch resources around, like, oh, work on this other area of research. But if you think about DeepMind and all of the StarCraft and the chess and the Go and all that kind of stuff that they did with Alpha.
That was Google, yeah.
Yeah, that was all Google. And so they still have some very amazing, impressive stuff. It just wasn't in the space of LLMs. But now they're also getting there with LLMs as well. So anyway.
Yeah, it's all about investors and stock price, right? Yes. They get kind of caught with their pants down without a good demo to match what OpenAI does. And so then they throw something together and they embarrass themselves. So it's really about public perception. I'm sure they have plenty of stuff going on, but they are already at the top. They didn't necessarily feel the need to have a product yet. Mm-hmm. So now they're caught trying to make a product. Not because they need to have a product, just because they need to show that, oh, we're also on top of this stuff. So this is about perception.
Yeah. Meta's the same way. We can't leave them out. They also have amazing researchers, a lot of really good stuff. So all the big players, Microsoft, Meta, Google, they're all doing stuff. It's not just OpenAI. Okay, we have to move on. This topic, I am really excited for this. I bought a Model S Plaid because I really wanted this car and just knew it wasn't going to be anytime soon. And it'd probably be in a price that my wife would not agree to. But the next-gen Tesla Roadster, we finally have an update. Finally, some glimmer of hope and news. Yeah, what did we hear?
Dude, it was unveiled back in 2017, I think. It's been a long time. It hasn't been a high priority for the company. And as I've said before, it probably shouldn't be. Probably right now, the halo vehicle is the Cybertruck. That's what everybody's talking about. But this Roadster, these are the specs that are still on the website right now. Range 620 miles.
I'm skeptical.
Who still believes that after the Cybertruck didn't make the 500 mile range? And they talked about something like a 200 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is unnecessary for this kind of vehicle.
Where would it fit? It's such a small vehicle. Where would you fit 200 kilowatts?
Similar to how the Cybertruck didn't get the range they wanted. Maybe they were predicting some huge step change in batteries.
Didn't quite get there.
Or maybe they thought their new cells would increase the energy density than they have. But these other things are still possible. 250 mile per hour top speed. That's rough too, because to not just flip up and fly away or something, you need a good aero for downforce to maintain traction. And then at the time, they said 1.9 second 0 to 60, which is impressive. Now, it was on the 28th of February, Elon put out a tweet. He says, tonight, we radically increased the design goals for the new Tesla Roadster. There would never be another car like this, if you could even call it a car. Now, let me come back to the timing a bit. So we've heard nothing about this car, really, just very minor things. In fact, we had a podcast episode where we talked after the fourth quarter earnings call, and they really downplayed the Roadster then. And we already had a predictions, like, when are they going to actually do the Roadster? And like, it's probably going to be a while because they still need to get the Cybertruck out and the Semi needs work. But a couple of days before the 28th of February, on the 26th of February, Tesla's probably biggest international competitor, BYD, And I wouldn't say I'd necessarily buy a BYD car. I'm not sure about their quality, but BYD showed off their supercar and it got some press.
I'd consider buying this one.
It looks fancy. You know, it looks kind of like a McLaren.
It does.
It's got a huge spoiler. And the price point is similar to what the Roadster price point was, like around $250,000. With 0 to 100 kilometers per hour, 100 kilometers per hour is like 62 miles per hour of 2.5 seconds. So sort of similar, not as good, but similar specs.
Deliveries this summer.
It also showed interesting features. I think each wheel has a motor, so it can do things like strafe a little bit and rotate itself about the center axis. And fancy gimmicks, but would be kind of cool in a car that you're trying to show off, right? Which is why you get a car like this. So then, yeah, two days later, Elon has to drop some bombs to say, oh no, we got the Roadster, it's coming. And so he said that they will unveil it at the end of the year. Now, I thought the car was already unveiled in 2017, but he said production design complete and unveil at end of year, aiming to ship next year.
I think that was in the past, Doug. Elon lives in the future. He's not worried about the past. Okay. He's going to unveil it because now they're going to actually work on to release it.
Okay. So it may ship in 2025. And the other thing he said is that it will have a 0 to 60 time of under a second. 0 to 60 time of under a second. That is kind of unreal. And by normal physics, it's not quite believable.
Physically impossible using traditional means of a car working, as in tires on pavement.
Yeah, exactly.
Traction, it's not possible.
Like the existing performance of things like the Plaid are pretty much near traction limited as they are, right?
Yes. It is traction limited on the launch line.
I was going to say, it has computer-enabled traction. So,
to be able to achieve that sort of thing, you would need significant downforce or get pushed along. Now, he's talked about it being a Tesla-SpaceX collab, right?
Thrusters.
Boosters.
Yeah, what has been suggested that they would take basically the RCS system, that's the reaction control thrusters from the Falcon 9 or from Starship, and put that in the car.
Strap them to the back.
That sounds kind of nuts. It's doable. I'm just sort of thinking about it. Like the only way you would do it reasonably would be to use liquid nitrogen, because nitrogen is sort of readily available. And you would have to refill it. You'd have to go somewhere and refill the liquid nitrogen, which is doable. You know, I used to do that all the time, but in a lab setting.
Well, they said hydrogen was doable too.
So. No, this is much more doable. Nitrogen.
This is more doable.
It's a completely different thing. I don't remember exactly, but the boiling point of hydrogen is like around 20 Kelvin, whereas liquid nitrogen is 77.3, I think, degrees Kelvin.
But the only place I can think of to get any quantity of liquid nitrogen is a welding shop.
Well, the fact that it's available there, it's much more available than you might think if you ever go to like a Smitten or one of these sort of ice cream places that make liquid nitrogen ice cream.
Oh, like, was it chemistry?
I've done it myself.
Dump it all in liquid nitrogen, stir it.
Yeah. I looked at it for liquid cooled computers before, like using liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, and it's not that expensive. The main cost is the energy. Praxair will just basically have these things, these big heat pumps that just condense the air. Nitrogen is 78% of the atmosphere.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Literally just drip it out of the air, like 20% of its oxygen, and you sort of separate out your nitrogen. So you could do that, and as a liquid, if you could refill the liquid, the difference between the density of liquid nitrogen and gaseous nitrogen is 10 to the 3. So if you have a liter of nitrogen, I forget what the factor is. No, I'm sorry. I know these things. So if you have a liter of nitrogen, you can get about 1,000 liters of gaseous nitrogen, you know, at standard pressure. So it will be compressed. You could use that as a thruster. And yeah, but it seems kind of crazy. I don't know, the cost of the system, you'd need a autogenous. Well, you need like a little heater to build the pressure up maybe.
So you've got your nozzle system, you got your storage system, you got all that plumbing in place, but you still have to bolt it to the frame somehow that doesn't rip itself off. So here we are with another gigacasting.
You'd have to design it with that intent.
Right.
It wouldn't be just like an add-on.
It's not a bolt-on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have to design the thing. Okay, there's going to be space for a cryo tank for the nitrogen and expansion space for the thruster for the gas. It's doable. It would take up some space, though.
It's going to add weight, but you kind of need weight for that downward force. No.
So that's the other thing. Like, where does it point? You might point them up so that it pushes the car down. And you could push them out the back too, but you risk the thing launching, flipping up and stuff. So you would probably want some of that thrust to get the tires to stick more.
I was just thinking, I had visions of you launching off the light to play tag with your next door neighbor car, and the poor guy behind you is getting a face full of exhaust.
So the problem is, it's going to be loud.
Definitely loud.
It's going to be potentially dangerous to things around you. Like, this is not a thing that I could see being street legal in a city, right? It's definitely a bit of a gimmick, but it's really cool as a space science nerd.
Very cool.
Very cool. Literally. Yeah, cool.
Actually, thinking about that, if you are near that thruster, or say even in the car behind it, the gas coming out is so cold that it will quickly condense the water in the air. So it's going to make a cloud.
Correct.
That you won't be able to see through. So it'll basically be like the smoke screen
fog
from Spy Hunter, if you ever played that video game. Also, it will be very cold. Cold enough that you will get burned. You'll get cold burns.
Correct.
So it wouldn't be safe to be near that thing. And you'd need ear protection too. It'll be very loud.
Ear protection, for sure.
I don't see it being road legal.
It's probably going to be one of those things where they build a car with it for like a drag strip. Here, look at what we did. But then you're not going to have that in your car that you buy.
Same vein of towing the Porsche.
Yeah. I don't know. There'll be, anyway, but it's potentially cool. I saw people suspecting possibly they'll have like a big fan under the car for like downward force or like some other kind of stuff. The problem is, anything that you do to increase your downward force is going to add a lot of inefficiency for when you aren't using the thruster. So do you really want your car to have crappier range and worse efficiency 99% of the time?
Bragging rights.
I guess maybe if you're buying a $250,000 sports car, it's not your daily driver, hopefully, and you don't actually care about that. But seems classic Elon and really cool, and I totally want one.
Think about that package. If the car already is $250,000, right?
Add the booster onto it.
It's a $100,000 add-on.
Maybe more than that.
Well, don't forget your carbon brakes. You got to be able to stop after you hit the gas on that thing.
Yes, the carbon brakes.
You know, you could just run a tube from the liquid nitrogen to the rotors, and then you don't need carbon brakes because you'll have like amazing coolant.
There you go.
That adds complexity, though, because you need your brakes to be warm, but just not too hot. So,
right.
Well, I think Lewis got the right. You just route the gas out to the front. So now you got retro boosters, not acceleration.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you blind yourself, too, because you'll blow a white cloud in front of you.
You blind yourself and you blow a hole in whatever you're about to hit. Anyway, good times. All right. Before we wrap up, I do have to say one kind of semi-exciting thing for me is they have finally come out with a new yoke for the Model S and X that has a center push horn. So if you don't like the horn button.
It's got a real button.
It has a reel. You just push the middle and the horn. However, from what I've been reading, while it is available and the new cars are coming with it, they don't have the firmware update for the retrofits yet. So I've seen some folks with my car trying to switch it out and they don't have the firmware available. Aww. So they can't officially swap it.
Why is that some super exciting thing that, here's a steering wheel where the center horn honks?
You know what? You would think that it wouldn't need to be, but there's a whole lot of, you know, plaid owners that have been crying about this for the last 2 years. So I don't use my horn, so I just drive around the person, you know. So.
Related to that, just before we wrap up, the EU recently put out some safety guidelines, right?
They did. So our good friends across the pond, the NCAP, basically said there's 5 critical tasks that's in the cockpit or a car that these new rules, which are supposed to be introduced in January of 26, must be done by a button or a stock.
There can't be a touchscreen.
Can't be a touchscreen, has to be a physical widget. So it's how to indicate direction, our turn signals that we know and love, how to trigger your hazard lights, how to sound the horn, which apparently is near and dear to Lewis's heart, how to operate the wipers, and how to call for the SOS functions, which is like a 999 in case something really bad happens. The Europeans are saying that these 5 are the most critical distractions that take place in the cockpit because of a touchscreen. And interestingly enough, AAA, which is on our side of the pond, AAA, they've done a study that backs this up. And actually, they take it a little further. The AAA study actually says trying to key in a new destination to the nav system is the worst thing of all
as far as distraction. It takes upwards of 45 seconds away from watching what's in front of you.
If only you could have your FSD on while doing it.
That's when I get yelled at mostly from the FSD, is when I'm trying to like adjust.
That's right. When you're not looking, you're busy trying to put in the nav.
or just trying to select a different supercharger. That's when it's like, and it's all mad at me.
Yep.
So Tesla already has a hazard button. For some silly reason, the horn button went away, but it's coming back.
Yep.
But the biggest thing is those stalks.
Turn signal. And the rules are such that they're not going to say you can't have the car, but we're going to reduce the safety rating.
Okay.
So Tesla Model 3 for right now has got like a 5-star rating. People are saying it could go as low as 3 if they don't fix, you know, see my air quotes, the stalk issue and some of the other issues.
So I wonder, though, it says that it has to have a button. It can't be a touchscreen. Do they consider the haptic feedback buttons on the steering wheel a button?
Didn't say.
Technically speaking, my turn signals are not a stalk, but they are a button on my steering wheel. I'm not going to the center console touchscreen.
They'll probably argue that point.
Same with my wipers. The only thing that I have to go to the center console would be normal nav, or if I'm doing like forward and reverse, right? Like if I have to change that.
How do you do wipers right now? There's a button specifically for wipers?
There's a button for like hitting your wipers, right? If you want to just set them off. And then when you press that and they're going, if you use the scroll wheel with your thumb, then you can change what the rate is. At least that's how I've always done it. I've never done my wipers on the touchscreen. In fact, I didn't even realize I could. I mean, I figured I probably could, but like I've never tried to on the touchscreen in my car.
And my car with 2018 Model 3, when I do the wipers, it's always I have to press the button for the washer.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it pops up on the screen and then you can pick and choose.
So I don't have to go through a menu, but I still have to mess with the screen to get the speed I want, since the auto wipers are trash.
Gotcha.
They don't work right.
Yeah, auto wipers are awful.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it's basically the same thing. I do the wash button and then I do the wheel, but it's all on the steering wheel. I don't have to look anywhere else to do it.
Well, so what's going to happen, you think? Is Tesla going to backtrack on the stalks or at least make it an option? I would think that they want the highest safety rating because that's a big selling point.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
You don't see them putting the stocks back or what?
I don't see them putting stocks back. No, I don't see them putting stocks back. I think it's a Steve Jobs moment of like, well, those people will die.
You're holding it wrong.
Yeah, you're holding it wrong. Insert the Steve Jobs one you want because he's done it multiple times.
Yeah.
I feel like Elon will be the same way. Now, granted, if Elon wasn't at Tesla, then who knows, right? Sure, they'd probably do it, but I don't see that happening. And again, I don't think it has to, right? I think there are other ways they could go about it. I think if the expectation is you're doing it on the center touchscreen on like a Model 3, yeah, that's ridiculous. That's not ideal.
And keep in mind, the article, in fact, both articles I read, were not directed at Tesla specifically. Tesla was rolled into the article, but several other major manufacturers were also called out because some of the other touchscreens I've worked in, like on the Mach-E, for example, is not user-friendly.
Not surprised.
When it comes to some of this finer stuff. So I think the EU is just trying to be a little proactive about the influx of touchscreens and manufacturers saying, oh, we can lose all these buttons and save all this money because it's all on the touchscreen now. We don't have to have this stock and that stock and this hard button and the wiring that goes with it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll see. They did backtrack on the yoke in terms of forcing everybody to have it, and now it's an extra cost.
I love my yoke. I would not want to get rid of it.
I'm glad you enjoy it. I hate it.
Love my yoke. Wouldn't change it. I would change it for the new yoke.
Speaking of your buttons on the steering wheel, it was brought up in a comment that the EU in particular, the drivers in the EU make a big deal about the roundabouts they have to deal with.
It's annoying.
And that the buttons are dangerous trying to do a roundabout and signal which way you want to go.
I wouldn't say it's dangerous. I'd say
they say it's dangerous. They just call it straight out.
You're basically not going to signal. They just say they're not going to signal, which you guess what? In this country, the vast majority of drivers don't seem to.
Well, we are talking regulators. We're not talking the driver.
Sure. Most driving, you're changing lanes, whatever. Sure. It's real easy. It's right there. I have the muscle memory. I agree. What sucks is in a roundabout. I have them here too. Those are the problem. The wheel's like this, and it's like, which way am I going to turn? Is it this way?
And roundabouts are becoming more popular in this country. I've seen plenty of places that used to be four-way stops that turned into roundabouts, and it's better for it. But yeah, even I did a test drive with that newer Model 3, and I had to go through a roundabout. And I'm like, in the few minutes I drove it, I wasn't able to find where to press the signal that I was coming out of the roundabout. So that seemed problematic. Other complaints I've seen about the yoke is using autopilot or FSD. The wheel is turning, and at some point you need to hold on to the wheel. You sit here and let your arm go all over the place, or you can't just sort of hold the wheel?
I've never had it jerk the wheel completely around while I'm driving.
Mm-hmm. If it's going through a roundabout, it's going to need to do that.
I don't think I've used it through a roundabout because I don't trust it to work in that situation. Well,
version 12 will save you, Lewis. Version 12.
For me, it's not a problem. I have my elbow on the side and I just hold it in my hand loosely. And if it goes away a little bit, I let go briefly, but whatever. Man, do we even have time for version 12 of these? Started going out to people.
It did.
Some of you out there have version 12.
That's all it is.
All it is. Some people now have version 12. I'm not one of those people. I look forward to being one of them soon. Means in the next few weeks, it'll probably go wider to a lot more people, hopefully.
I go and check my version every day. Yeah. Nothing yet.
Hopefully soon. All right. Well, that's our show, episode 61. Thank you again for hanging out, listening. As always, like and subscribe, hit the bell, do all the rant. You know what they are. They're social media things that we say every time. Follow us on Zitter. Is it called Zitter now?
Twitter,
I don't know what it is. Follow
X.
us on Twitter.
It's called X, formerly Twitter. That's what everybody says.
X, formerly Twitter. Okay.
Ridiculous.
Follow us on X, formerly Twitter and YouTube. You can always go to TeslaMotorsClub.com, become a supporting member. That helps out with the site, which helps out with the podcast. Thanks to our producers, Adam and Danny, and those helping behind the scenes. And as always, it was a pleasure. Episode 61 is over. We'll see you next time.
See ya.